Hey everybody, it's Michael here, and you're listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. Everybody, welcome back to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. My name is Michael. It's Friday, November 16th, 2012. We just listened to Ultraista with a little ditty called Small Talk. Lots has happened in the industry since we have talked to you last. Fiction-wise is closing down. 3M has announced a very interesting development with their partner Penguin. And this will affect a lot of libraries be able to get access to a lot of big name titles. We'll also run down some of the news that's transpired over the last week and give you our impressions of the Kobo Arc, which we just got into our Gadget Labs today. First of all, I'd like to welcome two new writers to our blog, and this is at goodyreader.com/blog. Bridget Alverson, she is a very diligent writer. She does stuff with MTV Geek, Comics AM. She does things with Publishers Weekly and a myriad of other publications. She specializes in digital comics, so we're going to be sending her off to South by Southwest, a lot of the Comic Cons next year, to report live from the scene on all the big announcements and get a lot of different interviews with people working for companies like Marvel, Dark Horse, DC, but a lot of the indie companies too. So if you're looking for the latest information on startup culture in the comic book scene, or if you're interested in knowing more about self-publishing with Comixology's upcoming program that will allow independent authors and comic book artists to be able to sell their comics through the Comixology ecosystem on iOS and Android, which is very cool. So we've reported on this on the past, but the program is set for launch for early 2013. So we will definitely be, you know, talking more about that. Paul Biba joins us from Telluride. He is one of the longest standing writers online for digital publishing. He was the editor-in-chief of Telluride for a number of years, recently retired, went on a brief sabbatical, and now is a staff writer at Good E-Reader. So last week, on average, we were publishing close to 12 to 16 different articles a day and breaking all sorts of Good E-Reader records on content produced. So I'm very happy that, you know, we're able to have a lot more perspective with myself, Sovi, and Mercy. And now we have two other great writers joining the team. So we're going to be able to bring a more fresher approach to a lot of the sort of segments of the industry that a lot of people pay attention to. You know, Sovi focuses more on tablets, Mercy more on digital publishing apps, and talking to a lot of people at various conventions. And of course, Paul and Bridget are bringing their unique flavors to Goody Reader. So we're very excited about that. One of our articles that's just actually gone viral in the last few days and picked up by the New York Times blog and a lot of other publications is Apple patenting animated page turns. Now, you see this very evidently in Apple iBooks, Amazon Kindle app. Most Android e-reading applications have animated page turns, even Google eBooks, where it allows you to turn a page but basically peek at what's happening on the page after, as well as being able to gesture with your finger and just keep on flicking pages. So this patent was originally filed beginning of 2011, was just basically approved about 2 or 3 days ago. And so now Apple has a patent for something that almost every other major e-reader company uses in their Android and iOS app. So it'd be very interesting to see how this plays out. It's definitely stirring up a lot of controversy. Feel free to weigh in. We have a post that was on the front page of Hacker News as well as on our website. So it should be on page 2 or 3 by now. But it's definitely a very interesting read if you're interested in the semantics of patenting and how this may affect, you know, the overall industry at large. Normally with the Goody Reader Radio Show, we tend to focus more on the big events that have happened, you know, in the digital publishing world over the course of the last few weeks. Before we get into sort of what's happened, I want to talk to you about what we just got today, and this is the Kobo Arc. Kobo Arc tablet is the company's second full tablet release. The first was the Vox, and even when we had it in our hands originally, it felt very outdated. Tablets seem to, in a very short period of time, have more RAM, more processing power, higher resolution. And when products, you know, are in testing for a while and they come onto the market, it's almost like they're already obsolete, you know. So when we had the Arc in our hands, we totally had the opposite. It felt like as fast as the Kindle Fire HD 7, the Barnes & Noble Nook Tablet HD, the Nexus 7. It felt like it was on par with all the big name tablets, you know, on the marketplace. It's a distinctively e-reading experience. I mean, it comes bundled with Press Reader, Zinio, various Kobo reading apps. It gives you no shortage of content, whether you're looking for magazines, newspapers, ebooks, kids' books, comic books, and things like that. The Kobo is really sort of adopted a very all-in-one type of ecosystem. Like, I really like the way that the store is presented on the tablets, whereas if you've ever had a Kobo e-reader and you access the store via Wi-Fi, it's very text-heavy. You know, there's things are very hard to find because there's no cover art really anywhere unless you go click 2 or 3 times in various sub-menus. There's really no uniform type of store with their e-readers, whereas with the store on their Android tablet is everything that all their e-reading stores should look like. I mean, if you ever had, say, like an Amazon, a Barnes & Noble, Simple Touch, any of their e-ink-based devices, if you go to their websites on the device to buy books, you see not a mirrored reflection of their, you know, HTML-based site that you would visit, like on your computer or Mac or and whatnot, but you know, there's cover art, there's panoramas, there's all sorts of things for you to be able to click on. People naturally respond to things like cover art, right? So if you see something that looks interesting and you don't recognize the author, you're going to click it and check it out. But because Kobo's e-reading store does not have any cover art, it's very text-heavy, for user discovery to find new content, I find it lacks. But this is like totally a 360 on the Arc. It's everything's full color, it's vibrant, it's everything else should be in terms of presentation. I found it was very easy within 1 or 2 clicks to be able to check out free comics and download a free comic, or to check out their new, you know, more multimedia based ebooks, no problem. Kids books, cookbooks, within 2 clicks I was finding free stuff, I was buying paid stuff, and so on. So their store is very cool. One of the hyping factors behind the Kobo Arc is a thing called tapestries. You can think of it as not just folders like you would see on like other Android, or if you would look at, say, anything on iOS. You kind of create these custom folders, and when you drop programs in there, the programs almost translucently appear on the folder. So if I've created a folder, say, called Goody Reader, and I've put Press Reader, Zinio, and I've put Marvel Comics in there, and so when I'm on my sort of main desktop swiping about, I can actually see the most accessed apps that I have in my own unique folder, and their icons are brought to the forefront. And when I click on the tapestries, not only do I see icons representing, you know, the apps themselves, but I can actually put widgets in there too. Very cool. So what I have is my Zinio app, and then I have a Zinio widget that shows all the different issues that I have, new issues that have come out. It's almost like a Metro-esque experience, you know, with the live tiles on the new Windows 8. It kind of feels like that, where you see the app icon, but then you also see like a Metro-type slideshow going on with new content. So I think that's super cool, and I like it how it sort of knows what you tend to access the most and bring that to the forefront. So it's good visual cues, you know, if you're creating gaming directories and so on. It's very easy to be able to find, especially if you tend to put a lot of content in there, but you only access a few programs, you know, averagely. Like, you may have Angry Birds Seasons and the original Angry Birds in there, mixed in with, you know, 40 of your other games, but, you know, you just put in Angry Birds, the Star Wars edition, you're tending to play that. In any type of other Android environment, it would be buried at the very bottom of the screen, but with tapestries, it knows what you're accessing more, so it floated towards the top. So when you go to your games directory, it's really easy to find, you know, what you're looking for. Super cool. Other than that, the hardware feels very slick. It's everything that the Vox was in terms of presentation. They really upped the resolution on this. Offhand, I think it's 1280 by 800. Don't quote me on that, but it's on that type of level. So you're seeing the same type of resolution on the screen as you are against its competitors, like the Nook HD, the Kindle Fire HD 7, and a ton of the other mid-range tablets on the marketplace. So it feels very current. I found that the front-facing speakers, because you're getting that stereo sound using SRS technology, that you could increase the bass, treble, and music, videos, everything like that, plays brilliantly. There's a front-facing 720p camera. I haven't really messed around with Skype yet, but we are doing our written and video review on Monday. So if you want to know our full impressions of the Arc, as well as full review videos, Arc versus the Nook HD versus the Kindle Fire 7 and the iPad mini. So we're doing next week is going to be hella busy at the Goody Reader Labs. We pretty well got the Kindle Fire 8.9, the Kobo Arc, the Nook HD, the Nook HD Plus. We also got the new B-Book Touch e-reader. So that's a lot of review videos. And then, of course, we do film tutorial videos, how to load ebooks, how to load in your own apps, and compare everything against each other. So if you're saying, you know, what's the difference between the Arc and the Nook HD? We put them side by side, load on the same magazines, the same ebooks, show you everything. So how games, movies, newspapers, content ecosystems look. So you can get a strong sense on what maybe device appeals to you more, what you're gravitating towards. So I'm going to end my rant on that. But Kobo Arc, I definitely think that as far as a tablet that will appeal to international users, you know, with the Nook HD, it's awesome if you live in the US or the UK. If you live anywhere else, there's a lot of workarounds you have to do to buy apps. You have to buy US-based credit cards, US-based billing addresses, which our Shop e-readers has. So we definitely are trying to fill a niche there for everybody to be able to get you buying content. But even like Amazon Kindle Fire HD in Canada, I can't you know, do certain things. I can't buy magazines. I can't watch videos with Prime, even though I have a Prime subscription. So fairly limited. Whereas the Kobo Arc, you know, because they're partnering with like 7 Digital, they're partnering with a lot of companies like Zinio, Pressreader, that very international. You know, they, if you live in Italy, there's Italian newspapers, Italian magazines. You know, you're good to go. So I definitely recommend the ARC to anybody who lives like in international countries that often feel underwhelmed with the access they have with the competing tablets. Barnes & Noble released their Windows 8 app. They did this, I think, on Thursday or Wednesday. And it seemed like almost 3 weeks or so since the original launch of Windows 8. It was odd that the Barnes & Noble Nook app was not a launch feature. You'd figure that Barnes & Noble put $300 million into a new digital relationship with Barnes & Noble that they would have really been hyping us, but they released it. It's okay. I mean, the one thing I like about it is that the store is built into the app, whereas, say, with the Amazon Kindle app, if you want to buy any content, it can do it with an app. It loads up Internet Explorer if that's your default, and that's how you buy books. Whereas with the Nook app, it's cool because you can buy books directly in the app. You don't have to leave the app. And I'm a huge fan of like not deterring users from the experience that they're doing. And that's the thing I hate about the Kindle app. I mean, you're in a Kindle app, you know, you're getting used to experience, buy book, oh, you know, internet, web page, totally different experience. So I like everything to be like self-contained. The app's cool. You could adjust your line spacing, your margins. You can do different types of themes. So you can make the background softer, gray, you know, butter. Put the background black, the text white. You can also choose between the font size and your different types of fonts as well. Or just go back to the publisher's default. So a lot of versatility, but it doesn't come without cost. There's a lot of features that didn't make it. If kids' books, there's no support. Zooming with comics, like their proprietary zooming technology, not there at all. Textbook support, if you're a student, you're probably going to fail with this app. So it's lacking critical features. And so we pointed this out a few days ago, and it's, at first, you don't really notice it, but then you start looking at enhanced ebooks you might have bought. Audio is working fine. If there's any video embedded into it, it's not going to work. There's a lot of things that Barnes & Noble needs to do to iron out their Windows 8 situation. It's a noble first effort, but definitely if you are doing business with Barnes & Noble for particular purposes, like if you're a student, they have a student bookstore on your campus, you buy all your digital textbooks through them, you have a Windows 8 Surface, or you know, just your, you know, PC, you can't really do anything within the app, so you still have to sort of have your Nook for PC or something like that for the old legacy versions. So I'm just saying. Okay, so really, if you look at what's sort of happening in the greater industry, it's telling in the respects by the types of financial reports that a lot of companies make. Hatchet has reported that they saw a 20% increase in digital sales in Q3 2012. If you look at sort of their year on year, they're always increasing. It seems as though that really 2011 was when most companies were starting to focus more on digital. And not only like is it with Hatchet, but it's like with other companies too. It almost seems like almost every company is reporting identical figures of 20%. And some companies have not like reported exactly the types of figures that they've done yet, but all the big six publishing companies, they're all roughly up about anywhere between 15 and 25% is about the average. Not too bad. And I actually read an article the other day, I forget the publication, but they were saying that by 2020, 80% of all books and all written content will be digital. So it seems though that when we talk to a lot of industry analysts, when we go to conventions, and speaking of conventions, we will be attending Future Book in London, England on December 3rd. Mercy Pilkington is going to be checking that out. We're going to be having interviews with Pottermore, Sourcebooks, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and a ton of other companies. So it's sort of like, when we go to things like this and we do talk to people like that, they all sort of say the same thing underneath sort of like the slick industry jargon, you know. Most people agree that it's all going digital, and that's why a lot of companies are investing a lot in sort of the digital ecosystems right now, and why, you know, Amazon makes billions of dollars a year, why Barnes & Noble, Kobo specifically reported a 300% increase on sales from prior year. They didn't mention specific figures because they sort of report them to their overlords at Rakuten. So, and Rakuten doesn't really dive into the specifics when they do their shareholder meetings. And believe me, I've looked at their shareholder reports, and you know, their Kobo stuff is just like basically one or two lines and don't really tout any numbers or anything like that. But big ecosystems are doing well, but major publishers are seeing 20% increases across the board. So believe you me, you know, it's all going digital. Not that books are going to go anywhere, but most of the cutting edge content and just the ease of delivery will really be huge by 2020. So that's, you know, basically the way that it seems like it's going right now. Seen as though ebooks and digital content selling well, how are e-readers doing? Well, it seems as though that 4.5 million e-readers are to be shipped during the holiday season. This is mainly going to go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo, and Sony, a distant fourth place. It's going to break records. The industry will see a 94% increase via the fourth quarter shipments in 2011. So this is like the high time of the year in which the entire industry is going to be able to sell a lot of e-readers. And a lot of this is mainly attributed to the low cost. You can get the Amazon Kindle fourth generation for $79. You can get the Kobo Mini for $79. And for Cyber Monday, Black Friday, ABA participating indie stores in the U.S. will be actually offering the Mini for, I think it's $49 or $39. So huge savings. So you can see why they're hustling so many units. If you look at even the price discrepancy, from 2011, a lot of e-readers didn't hit that $99 price barrier yet. They were all like $129, $139, $199, $249. And in 2012, e-readers for the first time started getting released by major companies for like $99. $79 is like the new benchmark. And so it's much more affordable to buy grandma an e-reader, or if you don't know what to buy someone and you like to read, hey, buy them an e-reader. It's an easy gift. So when I mentioned how many companies were really benefiting from this, I can give you some stats. Amazon accounted for 55% of the global shipments, Kobo with 20%, Barnes & Noble with 10%, with Sony with 6%. So out of the 4.5 million, that's the companies that are mainly, you know, going to be purchasing them and selling them. We're also seeing a lot of indie companies throw their hats into the fray for the holiday season. B-Book, Texter, Pocketbook, Onyx Books, Bokeen, so those companies mainly are sort of the front of the indie bunch, and they all have released new e-readers, both budget e-readers with touchscreen or non-touchscreen, but also e-readers that have the same type of technology as the Kobo Glow, Paperwhite, Nook Simple Touch with Glow Light, where the front-lit e-readers, all of them have developed it. So lots of kind of cool stuff. Also, seeing as though we're talking about Pocketbook, or I've mentioned them, that they themselves have just debuted some very interesting new front-lit technology with E-Ink Triton. What that is color E-Ink. We saw color E-Ink with the Ektaco JetBook Color, which was basically a branded Hanvon e-reader, and we did go hands-on with the Hanvon, I think in 2010 when they first showed it off. You know, the Itako Jeppo color, ridiculously overpriced, $440, and it was just woefully slow. I mean, we like the folks like Itako, but everyone, I think, has to admit that if you're spending $450 on something, it's probably going to be an iPad, not a JetBo color. But with the new PocketBook color, not only is it color e-ink with the second generation e-ink train, but also has front light technology. So it's pretty well the next stage in e-readers as I really see it. You know, color e-ink, so you could read comics, you could read all the full color magazines, high resolution, although the PocketBook version did not have great resolution. I think it had like 800 by 600 and or some such. Kind of crappy on the resolution, but, you know, it's good that companies are experimenting with this sort of thing. And PocketBook, I think, as sort of an indie company trying to differentiate itself from its competition, really, this is a huge competitive advantage because most companies are doing front light technology, but they're not messing around with e-ink Triton at all. And so it's very interesting that a company is. Probably the most major story of the week is fiction-wise getting shut down. It's not that anyone's suing them into oblivion or anything like that, but Barnes & Noble basically bought them out years ago, and the company is officially calling it quits. Here's a little bit of history. They were pretty well, when they launched in 2000... And this is the year 2000, not like 2009, 2005, but in 2000, they formed a partnership to offer micropayments for digital books in many different formats. So this was before really EPUB took off. This was text, RTF, PDB, you know, a ton of different formats. And people might say that these, if it wasn't for these guys, probably the ebook industry would never have taken off. What had happened is Barnes & Noble paid the company about $15 million in 2009. And this was around the same time that Barnes & Noble was releasing their Nook e-reader. So a lot of the early books and a lot of the reasons why the Nook entered the market offering a ton of books was mainly because a lot of them came from fiction-wise. After that, they mainly left, you know, fiction-wise alone. And since a lot of the other e-reader stores really developed hard, like in 2009 to about 2012, I mean, if you've been using e-readers for over a decade, in the last few years, they've really gotten slick, really refined. You can find any best-selling author. You can do a lot with the text, adjust them, line spacing, margins, a lot of crazy stuff. Whereas in the year 2000, it was looking at text or, you know, when they formed a partnership with the eBookWise reader, one of the first readers. So there was really nowhere left to go. I mean, if you even go to the FictionWise website, it looks like a website made in 1995. Like, if you look at the website, you see that, okay, this website was made like 10 or 15 years ago. It's just, it's crummy. There's gaudy colors. There's like animated GIFs. You know, it looks like a tripod site if you ever had one of those, or, you know, GeoCities or anything like that. If you've ever seen those old, really crummy sites, that's what FictionWise look like. So would you rather go to like an Amazon website where user comments, discovery engines built into it, a very slick, you know, searching system, similar books, past purchases, and then you go to like FictionWise and it's like you're clicking on this like small animated GIF, or, you know, clicking within five submenus and not finding like any bestsellers. It's mostly just indie authors and things like that. I mean, obviously, there's really hard, it's hard for a company to really do anything at this point unless you are have very deep pockets, which is always why I make fun out of all the press releases that get sent to us when we're like the Netflix of ebooks, or we're the Spotify of ebooks, or we're this or that. It's like, okay, you may have a little bit of VC funding, but ultimately, if you try to like make a go of this, like publishers and Amazon have satellites in space, and they're going to seriously shoot a death ray at you and destroy you. And that's pretty well what happened in fiction wise. They just were dwindled into obscurity. But again, I do have to laugh at so many companies trying to say they're the Netflix ebooks or an ebook subscription service, or we're going to disrupt the industry. Honestly, if they disrupt anything, they're going to get zapped by death rays from satellites from Amazon up in the sky. So I'm just saying. Before we go today, let's give you a quick rundown of some of the most essential stories of the week, and may only affect a certain number of users, but I think it's very important to kind of know what's going on. So Electronic Arts is bringing many of its games over to the Nook HD and HD Plus. You're seeing Bejeweled, Plants vs. Zombies, all the sequels. You're also going to see Real Racing, Tetris, Monopoly, and The Game of Life. The Babysitter's Club is getting the digital treatment once more. And if you grew up in the 80s and you were a big fan of The Babysitter's Club, which they had TV show, they had movies, a lot of fan culture behind us, the first 20 books are going to actually be available in a digital form very, very soon. If you are involved in National Novel Writing Month, it's at the halfway point. There's 300,000 participants pounding the keyboard right now to get a 50,000-page novel. A lot of people on Twitter are saying, I got sick, I'm 3,000 words behind. Oh no, I'm 6,000 words behind. Oh no, I'm 12,000 words behind. And they're all freaking out. Flipboard is going to curate Apple iBooks now in a bid to make some affiliate sales because their business model is not really working out. There is a 25-section category called books, and they're all from the Apple iBooks store. You know, each article will contain download information from iTunes as well as a synopsis on what the book is about. Press Reader was released for Windows 8, so if you're a fan of newspapers and you have the MS Surface, or if you just have upgraded to Windows 8 on your desktop, you can now read newspapers, which is very cool. Wiley has made an agreement with TED to bring a new form of educational materials to the classroom. They're pretty well making very easy for instructors to be able to use TED Talks for learning. So they're working on a bit of dedicated sessions where it's almost like a whole class would be devoted to this. So it's a lot of learning materials that are going to be provided. Bound Book Scanning and Book Baby formed a relationship. It's basically like an affiliate program where Book Baby is going to promote Bound Book Scanning to all of its clients that deal with them. The essence of this program is Bound Book has crazy book scanning technologies for a fairly low price. And this is like around anywhere between $30 and $90 that you could scan your book and digitize it. So if you do have like a backlist of three or four novels you wrote in the past and you really don't want to go through them all and hand type them to digital form, these guys will scan the book and digitize it, and then you could sell it through Book Baby and then put it like on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Kobo, and all those sort of companies. And that about wraps it up, you guys. That is the Goody Reader Radio Show. We're going to end the show today with a little ditty that you may like, and it features a cashmere cat. For the Goody Reader Radio Show, my name is Michael, and everybody take care.